Accession number 29238, Reel 2.
Mr. Wigan, Reel 2.
Well, you know, when I started my engineering apprenticeship at 16 and started going to night classes at the Tech, it never entered my head then, because we weren't, didn't look ahead, that I would be likely to have the war come along which could get in the way. But when it did come along, I felt this, this interest that I had in the TA, and a desire, like many others, to do a bit for the country. And I knew that I'd be exempt, so I was 18 on the 28th of February, 1939, and when they started recruiting in the March for this new regiment, I signed up. And that, of course, meant that I'd be called up, regardless of exemptions or anything else.
This was while you were still doing your apprenticeship?
I was still doing my apprenticeship. My apprenticeship was due to go on until I was 21.
What influenced you in taking up that apprenticeship? Was it family?
Just the family, the engineering history of the family. We'd been engineers right through from before my grandfather's day. His father, my great-grandfather, was chief engineer on the Great Eastern when she was acting as a cable-laying ship, you know. And my grandfather, I've still got some of his discharge papers from ships when they were running trading to South America in 750-ton ships and this sort of little, you know, toy boats toddling across, you know. No wireless or anything of the sort. But we have the tradition in the family, I suppose, it's just in the blood, really.
And this was one of the largest shipbuilding businesses on the Weir.
William Doxford's. It was the biggest. It was the combined shipbuilding and engineering works, you see. It was the complete job. They could build a ship and engine it, and it could go off from Doxford's. And they had six berths. And as a matter of fact, they won the Blue Ribbon during the First World War for the most ships built in a year. But they did quite a bit of naval work during the First World War on destroyers and the likes of that. But it was, I think, it was all merchant work during the war, as far as I can gather.
Do you know how many men they employed?
Ooh, I wouldn't like to say. Because there was both the shipyard and the engine works, and at the time office, you know, when you went to collect your cards, there were sort of sections of and numbers up, and I think at the engine works, there was something like 2,000 and odd, and then there was the shipyard, would be as many as that. I should think, I'd guess probably at about 3,000 or 4,000 men altogether, and doctors employed.
What was it like as a 16-year-old lad starting work at such a big place like that after years at school?
It was strange in a way, but although our firm at home was so much smaller, I mean, it was still an engineering workshop atmosphere, and I spent hours down there as a kid, and you know, with all the lads and one thing and another, damn nuisance at times, I think, but I they were very good with me, and so that really it wasn't as big a change for me as it might have been for some lad who'd never been in an engineering workshop in his life. And the head foreman, as it happened, was Mr. Wilson, Bob Wilson. He had served his apprenticeship under my grandfather at our works and worked for us for a number of years. And a number of our fellows there, they would come up and say, "Hi, lad, you know, I worked for your father." And, you know, the fellow who moved on to, because they could make a bit more money at doctors, a piece of work and that. So naturally they moved. So there were a lot of our fellows working down there, and some of them I knew, of course, from the village. So that while it wasn't their own home, it wasn't as strange as all that.
And what sort of work were you doing there?
On machines and lathes, turning or shaping and one thing or another. And at the time when I was called up, I was on the marking table, which was a very interesting job for an apprentice, because you started to really learn to read engineering drawings, being on the marking table, you know. And the marker off, Hattie Thompson, he was very patient and very good, and he gave us a lot of experience and knowledge and one thing or another. But I wasn't working there when I'd been moved from there into the tool room, learning as a tool room fitter. And I was in the tool room when I was called up.
So you had to do various jobs?
Yes, you moved around, you know. Mm-hmm.
What sort of hours did you work?
7:30.
Was that 5 days a week?
Five and a half, Saturday morning. Monday to Friday and Saturday morning. And then it came just before the war, and you got the full Saturday off, didn't you? I think it was just before the war that came in.
How much did you get paid?
Well, when I left at 18 to join the forces, I was getting sixteen shillings a week and 1/6 off for stamps. So I was getting 14 and sixpence.
Was that a good wage in those days?
Well, I suppose it wasn't bad. I mean, qualified fitters and turners, they were getting about £3. So, you know, I suppose it's comparable, really. But it would be nice to have had more, but he didn't complain, he just got on with it.
Were there any trade unions?
Oh yes, I was in the, what was then the AEU, and what did they become? The AEWU or something of the sort, and they amalgamated with somebody else eventually, and I was in the AEU.
Was the trade union important?
Well, I mean, you had to be in a trade union, you know, in the shops. And they were, I think. They established conditions, working conditions, and labour, payment, wages, and one thing and another. And I remember my father was always basically strange, some people would think for that day, for an employer, but he was always a strong supporter of the trade unions. He said to me, he said, "You know, a well-run and responsible trade union, lad, is as much use to the employer as it is to the men." He said it helps the job to go along smoothly. But so that I was in until after the war, or during the war, after a while they stopped you having to contribute. But my father kept up my contributions while I was in the army until it stopped. So I was in for quite a while, then I moved on, and that'll come later. And I changed unions, you know, for the job.
Whilst you were studying for your apprenticeship, you were still at college as well, weren't you?
A night school, yes. 3 nights a week, 9 months of the year. But it wasn't easy.
What were you studying?
Engineering, you know.
Was part of your apprenticeship?
Oh yes, it was all an engineering course. And it was interrupted, of course, with the war. But there were lots of things that were interrupted by the war. But a lot of things never picked up again, eh?
Were you ever a member of anything like Scouts or Church Lads?
No, I wasn't. My father, he was a very keen scout as a young fellow. And when the scouting movement first started, he started a troop. And he had the third troop in the northeast of England. Vaux's Own was the first troop that was ever formed. The YMCA was the second troop that was ever formed. And the first South Hilton was the next one, followed about 3 weeks later by his friend Jim McLaren at Offerton. And so that they were a bit of a race between Father and Jim McLaren as to whose warrant came through first, and Father's came through 3 weeks early, so that Offerton always claimed that they were before us, but they weren't. It was Father's warrant came through 3 weeks before Jim's. And when he joined the Territorials, his two younger brothers took him over, and they were very flurried, had 70 lads in a village troop, you know, and a very flourishing troop until the First World War came along, and then everything went egg-shaped. And I was never a scout because I never really got off the ground in the village after that. Later on, you know, my son was in the scouts a bit. They got going never anywhere to compare with those early days. But around about the 70s, the church had a troop for quite a while, and then there was a troop of Sea Scouts, but they seem to have faded out now as well. There's never been the enthusiasm, unfortunately, because I think it's a very good movement, excellent movement, a bit of discipline for one thing. But of course, as I say, the war changed an awful lot of things, the First World War, and so did the Second World War. But go back to myself, I mean, I was called up as a result in 1939.
So you took the decision to join the Territorials?
I did, yes.
And so when did you actually enlist in the Territorials?
Well, I signed up in the March, as I say. I was 18 on the 28th of February, and it was sometime during March they started recruiting for this regiment, the 274th Field Regiment, and I signed up. But we weren't actually, I don't know what the term would be, not embodied, because that was when you were taken to the regular army for the war. But we were... We'd signed the dotted line, but we weren't actually active servicemen.
What happened? How was it organised?
In what way?
When you joined the territorial, where did you join? Did it have
at Livingston, at the Green Drill Hall at Sudlard, which is no longer there. And they had a squad of people over from the 74th Field Regiment of Shields, and you went in and you decided you were going to join, and they took your name and your, your address, etc., and you signed that you were going to. And then in, I think it was the May, I've got still got the papers, the card somewhere, I think it was in the May when we were actually formed as a regiment.
So did anything happen between that time of your signing?
No, we just have to wait until we got notice to start to appear for drills.
What influenced you to join that particular regiment?
Well, just really that, had there been a service corps, or Royal Army Service Corps as it is now, unit in the town, but again, being fathers, old unit, I would have probably joined there. But this was a new unit formed, and again, I suppose, the mechanics in my blood, field guns, wagons, this sort of thing, you know. And as I say, it was a new unit. So, and they were wanting men because they were starting from scratch. One like some of the other established ones who were just, I mean, you could have signed on for a battalion of the Durhams, but they could have been full strength, so you were embodied into the Durhams, were sent off to some other battalion, you know. But this, you were going in as a new regiment, so you were going to be there.
Was there any kind of medical examination when you joined, or any other kind of...
Very brief. Yes, you could breathe. They looked in one ear and couldn't see out the other, and that was sort of enough. You didn't limp in or anything like that, you know. It wasn't a very stringent medical.
Did your parents support you when you joined the tutorial?
Oh yes, yes. Father never pushed it, but he was quietly pleased that I had, you know. I followed his example, and he did everything he could to help me. That I remember when I was actually called up for the war, when I got my papers, you know, I was embodied a week before the outbreak of war on the regimental's key party, which is a group who can be suddenly shot off anywhere to start to get a place established through a regiment going, that, you know. And we were going, due to go to camp at Whitby on the Saturday. Our first camp was still there. But so I left Doxford's on the Friday night to go to camp, and of course things were beginning to look very black. And I remember the fitter I was working with, a nice chap, in the tool room. I said to him, "Can I keep my tools in your locked drawer, Bob, till I get back from camp?" "Aye," he said, "put them in there, son." And he says, "I promise you I won't use them till I see your name in the casualty list." You go, thing to look at as black as that.
But just going back to when you actually joined the Territorial Army, was there any hint of war at that time?
Oh, heavens, yes. I mean, that's why they were forming the regiment. 1939, it was looking very, very black. The gathering storm, as Churchill called it. And I came home that night, and when I went in, Father smiled and handed me a brown paper envelope and said, "That's for you." And he opened it, you know. He knew what it was. I mean, after the years he'd been in the army, That is, my papers calling me up, you see. And
so did you go on was there any organization? Did you go into a drill hall or anything of that nature and receive uniform before you were called up?
Well, we already had our uniforms. That's about all we had in mind.
So what had you actually done before joining the Territorial Army and before you were actually called up?
Oh, well, once we got our papers for the Territorial Army in the May, then you attended drills so many times a week, you know, and you learned a little bit about gun drill and marching drill and how to salute and one thing and another. But when I say gun drill, we only had 2 4-5 howitzers from the First World War and 2 18-pounders. It was divided into two batteries, and there was a howitzer battery and a field gun battery. And these old First World War guns, two guns, to train on. That's all. That's our armament. That's all we had. And no ammunition issued, of course. You eventually got rifles. Not a rifle.
Were you issued with uniform?
Oh, we were issued with uniform very early on. We got battle dress, you know. We got the battle dress. And unlike Dad's army, we weren't going about in sort of cloth caps and shoes and one thing or another. We did get the battle dress. And we went off to camp in the normal way, because the war wasn't declared. And we had a week of the fortnight's camp at Whitby when we were suddenly called back. On the Saturday night, it was a Saturday night when we got back to Sunderland, to the drill hall, and we were on parade the next morning when war was declared. And that, as I say, I'm still on camp, never finished.
How long had you been in the Territorial Army before war broke out?
Just from the May, really, May. Until September. Oh, and we're all green except the lads who'd been transferred from the 74th to train us and stiffen us up a bit, you know. The senior NCOs and our commanding officer, then Major, later Colonel Dean. He was a regular, was Colonel Dean. Finished his service with the regulars. He was a field artillery sergeant in the First World War and commissioned in the field. Carried on in the regular army, and when his time was finished, he I presume applied for and got the job as full-time adjutant for the 74th Field at Shields. So that when the 2nd 74th was established, Major Dean was sent as commanding officer and then promoted Lieutenant Colonel. And what a first-class bloke he was. He was a thorough and strict disciplinarian, oh yes. But there's nobody I could think of I'd rather have served under than Colonel Dean. A great bloke. And a number of the 74th officers, my battery commander, eventual battery commander, Major Mackenzie, who was another gent of the First Water, he was a South Shields chemist. He came over with him as captain, and one or two others. From one or two officers, and Captain Ridley, another one who came, Lieutenant McQueen, he was 74th, and then a number of senior NCOs and down to gunners, you know, all ranks to help to train us.
Were you mostly all new recruits that joined in 1974.
Yes.
What sort of backgrounds did they come from?
Everything. Everywhere you like, you know. A mixture of everything in the district came, you know, from shipyard lads and labourers, from way down Hendon and East End, to folks living away up the West End, and lads training for the civil service, and all sorts. A complete, absolute mixture. But we were equally so a complete family in no time at all. We were absolutely, you know. Again, there's no, I can't think of a batch of blokes I would rather have served with. It was a great crowd.
Well, what did you think of the training and what sort of training were you doing? When you first joined the TA, before the outbreak of war, you had nightly drill meetings and. What sort of things were you doing?
It was a bit monotonous because, you see, there was a shortage of equipment, you know, so that the officers must have had a hell of a time, really, thinking what on earth to do with us.
What was a typical evening?
Marching drill and a bit of PE and map reading and that sort of thing. Very little equipment work, rifle, handling a rifle, or we taught you how to handle a rifle and how to stick a bayonet in somebody and that sort of thing, you know, because we had some ex-regular army infantrymen who joined up with the territorials, and It was a bit monotonous, I must admit. It got a bit monotonous, the training at first, you know. And we never got our complement of guns, field guns or howitzers, ever. Because having trained on these four guns all that time, after Dunkirk, we were converted to anti-tank artillery. And we did, before very long, get our full complement of anti-tank guns, 2-pounders, but of course, bless them, although they were lovely little guns, first-class engineering jobs and as accurate as blazes. They just bounced off tanks, you know. the little 2-pounder was like a pea shooter. But at least we got our 48 eventually. 48 gun regiment.
What was people's feelings about the anticipation of war? Clearly, you knew that war was coming.
Again, mixed a lot of apprehension, naturally, and as always, of course, a lot of folks were scared about it.
There's a feeling of excitement as well.
Well, amongst the younger folks, there was there tended to be a bit, you know, because after all, we were going to knock the stuffing out of Hitler in no time. But there was, at the same time, there was a determination, you know. It was a very worrying time for the ladies, I think, the mothers, you know. I think although he was very proud of what I'd done and pleased and that, it was a worrying time for my father, because I was the youngest, and I must say, although there wasn't a great deal in it, I was slightly the favourite, because I was the only one of the family who he saw up right from birth, because my eldest sister was just about 2 years old when he went to France, and the others were all born while he was infants, and you know, he saw them on leave. In my case, I was born 1921 after the war. You see, so that I was the only one that he saw right through. And I was following his footsteps and engineering and that, and we were quite alike, my father and I, in many, many ways. Not every way, but in a lot of ways. And you were... I mean, he offered to get me out. You know, when we'd been in a while, and the phony wars, they call it, and everybody was wondering, is anything ever going to happen? He said to me, well, leave, you know. He said, how do you feel, lad? Would you like me to apply to get you out for the firm? Yes, I could do, you know. I could get you discharged into the firm. I could use you.